You're listening to the Board Game Snobs podcast, a ridiculous podcast with ridiculous hosts that discuss ridiculous things. And any mention of board games is purely coincidental. And so, without further ado, and with a heavy dollop of shame and embarrassment on my part, I give you the Board Game Snobs.
And go.
Hey, sorry. This is Jerry. Welcome to Board Game Snobs Podcast. We were recording today.
That is indeed what we're doing.
As evident by the fact that we have an episode instead of not having an episode. This is what we like to see.
Better something than nothing, I guess?
That's what I always say. Better something than nothing. I don't even remember what we were talking about last time. Dune? That was weeks ago.
Pluto.
I was reading about it'll be all the rage because you're a sci-fi fan, but that Three Body Problem, it's on Netflix, the series, which is, well, it's actually the American remake of the series, but it was a book series that I've read, or at least partially read, and it's about space, and Pluto made me think about it just now because I figured you'd already watched it because you watch an inane amount of television. Have you indeed watched it?
I have not had a chance, no.
All right, well, don't.
Okay.
Read the book instead.
I didn't know there was a book.
The book's horrifyingly boring.
Oh, well, you've got me sold already.
But it has neat ideas. Do you need characters in your books? Do you need to really feel like you like the people, or can you just deal with the idea?
No, because that's how Foundation was. It's like this big idea, and I found Foundation horrendously boring.
All right, well, then you won't like the Three-Body Problem. Because that's all that it is. It's very poorly written characters with big, grandiose ideas.
Well,
for which I will not spoil.
Is each body a character in the show? Is there three characters?
No. The Three Body Problems refers to three suns of orb gases, light bulbs in the space, not your prodigy.
Celestial bodies.
Yes. How do you deal with three suns if you had them in your solar system?
You eclipse them all, as we're soon about to see take place in our very own solar system.
Yeah, are you having a watch party?
In a matter of days, we're going to have a festival, offer up sacrifices.
But are you going to take off work and watch it? We are in the path of totality.
I am taking off work. I took off work. Now, did I take off work specifically for this eclipse? In fact, I did not. It just happened to be a happy coincidence. If you believe in such things, I'm actually, a friend of mine is having a graduation party, and it's, she asked me to be the DJ. DJ, Gabby. So I'm preparing for that. I have my speakers ready, and I just
she's doing it on a Monday?
No, but I just plan on being exhausted from DJing so vigorously. That I took off Monday because lots of her friends and family and some of my family's coming in and they're going to be staying with us. And it's just going to be a long, hard weekend. So I said, I'm going to take it off. And I took off that Monday. Lo and behold, the eclipse is coming, as is a comet.
Nah.
Apparently, there's a comet that's going to be at the 11 at the 11 o'clock position. So, they say if you have a good pair of binoculars, you might be able to see the comet at totality of eclipsiation.
That would be dangerous to me, be trying to look through binoculars while the eclipse is going on. Because I assumed you'd have to take your glasses off to do that. And I'm sure you
Well, you can. Do that. Well, when the eclipse is in full effect and the sun is completely covered, you can, in fact, look at it bare-eyed.
I don't know about that.
I do. You can. Now, as soon as the sun comes sneaking back around, you better slide those glasses back on. But they say you can look at the sun. You can look at the eclipse as it is in full effect, as long as the sun's not coming out, because it is just it's literally the moon in front of the sun. There's no brightness for up to like 4 minutes or something.
Well, it depends on each area.
Right. Well, here in the path we're in of totality, we get like 4 or 5 minutes of total eclipsiation. Eclipsia. That's what Sybil died of in Downton Abbey. They had an eclipse and it killed her.
Only when the moon obscures the sun's bright face during a period of totality. So, yeah, you can look at it. Yeah. Okay. All right. Making sure. Yeah, you're right. When you said that, it sounded right. But then I thought for a moment, I'm about to agree with you and blind all of our listeners, because some people would just take your word as gospel. I'd hate to find out we've got people out there. Oh, Tim Bowers out there staring at the sun. you know him. He's the first. He was literally the first name that popped into my mind. And he's also this. I was going to name one of our people in our Facebook group, and he was the first person who popped into mind. So that is both a insult and a compliment.
Yeah.
Think of it that way.
Tim. And I'm sorry, Tim.
Don't look at the sun, Tim.
Are you excited for the eclipse?
I am not, because according to our emergency management stuff that's going on in this area, we're like scheduled to have like 100,000 more people touristing the area. And so we're having to increase all of our EMS stuff. And I'm trying to juggle with figuring out how we're going to be taking people off work. And it's crazy. And I'm not liking it.
It's so weird to me. Like, I just never really thought it was that big a deal, I guess. I mean, you know, you hear of eclipses all the time. But apparently.
But not totality, though.
Well, how often do you think a totality eclipse occurs? I've looked this up.
You looked this up.
It's kind of a trick question.
I know we had one in 2017, 2016, something like that.
So you're floundering, and because I know the answer, just because I asked this very question and I was confused about how often they are and this and that, partials and lunars and solars, full eclipses. Well,
like, we're not going to have another solar eclipse, a total solar eclipse for like 20 years or something. I know that.
Total solar eclipses occur every 18 months. However, here's the big however. Here's the big to-do. In your specific location, it's about every 400 years. You going to spot check me on that one, too?
No. Wait a second. Now, because I thought it was like another 20 years. There's going to be another one, right?
According to this, I Googled, how often is there a total solar eclipse? And it says every 18 months. There are between 2 and 5 solar eclipses each year, with a total eclipse taking place every 18 months or so. Total solar eclipses are seen every 400 years from any one place on the surface of the Earth.
Okay. Well, I know the United States, North America, will have another one in 2045. We will have another total solar eclipse in 20-something years, 21 years.
You're just going to have to drive somewhere to do it. Yeah, my brother-in-law, Barry, went to the one, I think he went to like Kentucky or something for the one a few years ago. And he was very enthused by it. Like, he's like, it's neat, it's cool. And I'm like, isn't it kind of just like, you know, evening time? It's just a little bit darker. But he says it's an eerie sort of dark.
Well, so yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. I remember a partial that occurred just a few years ago, maybe last year. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. They seem to happen so often, but I guess this one, because of where we are located in the world, it's a big deal. But I remember one occurring that was a partial, and I was driving down the road, and I was like, huh, it's kind of like a bunch of clouds got in the way of the sun for a second. Everything looked kind of weird. I was like, oh, yeah, it's a partial eclipse. But I think it's pretty neat. I'm not, you know, crazy about it. I wouldn't drive anywhere. Fortunately, my in-laws happen to live in Clarksville, which is like right in the center of the path. So, you know, just works out.
I feel like this is at least, I'm shocked that people are as enthused by this as they are, to be honest. Because this is like something that I just assume people would not care about anymore. Literally, that we've landed stuff on the moon again here recently, and nobody seemed to really care about it. But now this is like a thing where everybody's super excited.
They're selling t-shirts at Walmart.
Yeah. So it's like, it's weird. It's like there's certain things that people catch on to that they really like, but they have zero interest in other scientific advances or other neat things that take place. And it's like, but this, I don't know. It's, I would think about it.
Poor old lunar eclipse just gets left in the dust, I guess. Nobody cares about it.
Oh, well, no. I mean, it's a thing, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know why people are interested in this. I'm shocked.
Shocked and amazed. Yeah, they're saying there's going to be like a million people in this area. I'm like, really? Is there really? But, you know, leave it to me to be underprepared, and we'll probably run out of food and water and have to start cannibalizing each other or something. I don't know.
Did they really say a million people in Paris, Texas?
I think so. Don't take my word for that.
I know Durant has 100,000 extra.
A lot more. Cowboy Stadium coming into Durant, basically.
Basically. And it's a small town. You know, you got a town 23,000 people, and all of a sudden you have 100,000 people tourism. But anyways, who cares? Nobody cares. I don't care about the eclipse. It's a thing. It'll be a thing. People will see it, and there you go.
And it's only like just a few minutes long.
Yeah, I'm not as enthused as others. There you go. Is that your banter? Is that what you wanted to banter about? Was the eclipse?
I'll be dancing naked in the eclipse light, drinking my Bud Light.
That's the idea. So there is no eclipse light. Anyways, is that the banter that you had you wanted to talk about?
That was it. Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
No, I thought you had something specific you want to talk about. It felt like this was ramrodded in at the last minute. I didn't know.
Eclipse talk?
Yeah, you just start talking about it.
Did you know tomatoes are the world's most popular vegetable?
Yeah, but they're not a vegetable.
Fruit?
Yeah.
They got it classified as a vegetable on here. I wonder if it's the world's most popular fruit.
Tomatoes are a fruit.
Hey, Siri, what's the world's most popular fruit? Bananas. So tomatoes are skewing the statistics of most popular vegetables and fruits.
Well, tomatoes aren't a vegetable, so it doesn't matter. It's a fruit.
Siri, no one's talking to you now. I asked you my question. You did your job. Be quiet. Well, according to whatever I had looked up, it said tomatoes are the world's most popular vegetable. Apparently not a site to be trusted if they don't know the difference.
I think
most people classify it as a vegetable just because that's what it was called for so long until people got picky about the whole it has seeds inside of it thing.
It's a berry.
What meat is the most popular in the world? Do you know?
Chicken.
False.
Pork.
Correct.
I wouldn't have thought pork, but strangely enough, I do have pork chops thawing right now.
Pork is number one, followed by poultry. And then beef.
I'm not a big fan of pork.
I'm not either. I know lots of people like, they're big fans of pork chops, fried pork chops.
Yeah, that's what I got. Yeah. Like I'm just not a big fan of pork.
My mom used to do the old shake and bake pork chops where you put them in the bag and shake them up with the breadcrumbs. Those were fine. I don't like the texture of pork chops or pork.
I don't either. They kind of got a like a very flat, kind of rubbery, texture like to it.
It's like a hard olive or something. I don't know. It's weird. I will eat it. A good pork, even a pork chop. I'm not a pork chop guy. Now, ribs, I like some pork ribs, but I don't go out of my way to get those unless I'm at Chili's.
It's greasy. I don't really like stuff that's super greasy.
As far as just meat, I'm a plain old beef guy. Just give me some beef. Where's the beef, one might ask? And goats and sheep make up 5% of what's consumed in the world.
I'm reading your post on our Facebook about what people played this weekend, because this was one of the few weekends where I had a moment to actually play some solo stuff, because I've given up on the idea of ever playing board games with people again until BGG. Yeah, so like I played a bunch of solo stuff, and so I'm just jealously looking at what people have played with people that apparently want to play board games as well, because that's a thing. So, yeah, Phil Johnson. Yeah, I love Cryptid. It is an amazing game. He said he played it 3 times. I love Cryptid. I brought it home so that I could have somebody to play it with. But apparently, Cryptid does have some rules that you have to... If you mess it up, you mess it up. That's the problem. And you mess it up for everybody.
Yeah. It's not a... Oh, we messed it up. We can overlook it as we move along. If it's messed up, it's messed up from the beginning, and you won't know it until the end, sadly.
Scott Hill played Galactic Cruise online. that Galactic Cruise is like the big Kickstarter thing that's been going on for a while that everybody's talking about. I looked at. I don't know. I'll be interested in seeing what it's like. Tim Bowers played the Mind with some sort of weird rules to it.
The Judge Ito rule.
Ah, the what rule? Oh, the Ito rules. Yeah, he basically, they played the Mind, but they played it like that wavelength game where you say a word that gives you an idea of the number or whatever. Yeah, okay. Good for you, Tim.
Yeah, they posted, or I haven't had a chance to see what that means, those rules do, but I mean, sure, if it makes the Mind a better game, the Mind is mildly interesting, but yeah, it could use some jazzing up.
Yeah, Urban Presker played Cryo, which is a game I want to get back to. Love Cryo. Christopher Preston, he played Star Wars Unlimited, as do I, which I'm going to be talking about Star Wars Unlimited in my What Has Jerry Done Here Lately as a Good Deed segment. We got to keep that segment going as I rebrand myself as a good person. Star Wars Unlimited, I haven't got to play it with an actual person, but I have sleeved it, and I rarely sleeve games. And I sleeved this one because the cards feel cheap to me. Which apparently that's a thing that all TCGs or CCGs and all that, all they have cheap cards. I didn't realize that. There you go.
I mean, I think I've seen some Pokemon cards that look pretty cheap.
Yep. Cheryl Miller played a four-player game of 1846. Which 18XX game do I have? I have 1846. I bought it from under Chad Chachon's nose. The Race for the Midwest, 1846. She says, it's hard. It's fantastic. All right.
It's hard and it's fantastic.
Dune Imperium got played by Mikhail. I can't say his
Gorbachev.
Name. Myzika. Myzika. I don't even know if I said your name right. Mikhail. Mikkel. Send us an email with how to verbally say your name. You can record it. So say your name right. I can't say people's names right. And it bugs me. If I read something in a book and I don't know how to pronounce somebody's name, it makes me upset. I have to get online and hear it. Such as when I was reading The Three-Body Problem, which is written by a Chinese dude. And he had a lot of Chinese names. And I wanted to be able to say the names in my head correctly. So I had to look them all up, which basically, you know, slowed it to a grind. But anyways.
That's kind of why I like the Audible version sometimes, because they say the names for you.
I don't like list I have discovered, and I'm not saying this to be pretentious, as I say most things. I'm saying this because I've discovered that I don't have an inner monologue. I can't listen to books hardly. Like, it doesn't stick the same way as when I read it. Like, I just read The Sparrow. I'm trying to get into this, like, some hard sci-fi stuff. And I had the option of listening to it and reading it, and I realized that I just can't listen to it. It just doesn't have the same books that I've listened to. Don't stick in my head
so
the way it does when I read them.
I think we discussed you not having an inner monologue because that was something I didn't know existed until I saw a tweet about it.
Right. Yeah, we've had that discussion. Like, you don't have it. I have no inner monologue. You have just anxious something. I can't remember.
I can hear my own voice in my head.
Which has got to be very annoying. Because I don't hear anything. Honestly, I don't hear anything. I don't know what this is. Am I a serial killer? Yes.
No, it's a
thing. I really like eating cereal.
It's a thing. Also found out this weekend, Bubba's wife cannot visualize things in her mind.
I can't either.
Really?
I've said this. So the reason I read The Three-Body Problem and The Sparrow and several other sci-fi books here recently, which I'm currently working on that Neuromancer book, is because I have trouble with sci-fi books because they basically want me to imagine something and I can't imagine it. Like, I love it if I'm reading about something and they go, all right, here's a picture of it. Like, I like if somebody does fan art to some book, I'll look it up as I'm reading the book so I can have something pictured in my head. Same thing with characters. It drives me insane when somebody starts describing what a character looks like because I can't picture them. I'm not actually picturing the character in my mind as I'm reading the book.
So, question.
And so, like, go ahead.
Once you see a picture, can you then remember the picture in your head?
Yes, that's the person. If I see that, if especially if I watch a movie that has that character in it, that becomes that person in the book. So, for instance, I read The Terror without watching the series first, mm-hmm. and then I watched the series, and then Jane St. James, that Tobias Mazur guy, that British dude, he then became that character in my head. If I reread that book, he's always that character. Jared is always the captain. You know, so it sticks in my head. He's always Crozier. And so that just, yeah, if I see their face and go, this is them.
But them describing something to you, their proportions and eye color, you don't just kind of like imagine, you can't imagine something.
No, I'm not imagining.
You have no imagination is what you're saying.
Correct. I don't. Man, that's a thing. Interesting. It's an actually physiological thing when it comes to being able to extrapolate from a description. This is what this person looks like. I do better with the big ideas and the philosophies behind it, which is why I think I made it through the three body problem decently enough, because it was like the characters all sucked, but it's dealing with big ideas. So I'm like, okay, I'm thinking about the idea. I'm not thinking about the characters. But anything that's character driven, I'm not really getting into exactly what that person looks like. I just think of them as a caricature, like an archetype. Like, this is the wussy doctor person that's scared of everything. Okay, that's that guy.
Yeah. So you don't like just kind of relate that to like something that might be similar?
No. Because that's not the person.
So like in the book, like for instance, I was just thinking of Prey, because it deals with those nanobots, and those nanobots would like form up, and they form a giant S. You can't then just like picture, because you know what an S looks like, can you picture that in your head? Or a tornado? Well,
yeah. I mean, I get an idea of it, but it's not as moving as... I guess some. So, for instance, what got me on this sci-fi tear was that I've had several people talk about reading a book and it's frightening them. Uh-huh. So, I just went down this wormhole of like, what sci-fi books are straight up frightening, which is where I kept getting all these recommendations. This is why I kept reading them, because I've never been frightened by a book. I've never read a book and gone, this is disturbing. Like, you always see the reviews, I had to put it down. I've never had that. Like, I've read something that I thought was very interesting. And like kept wanting to read it, but I've never read a book where I'm frightened by what I'm reading.
What about emotions like sadness?
Oh yeah. I mean, like, yeah, I can read a book and go, well, that's a sad thing that's happened, especially if you read The Sparrow. It's incredibly sad. But at the same time, I don't think it's as impactful because I can't imagine it. I've found that the books that appeal to me are, I do like that. Kind of like the terror, kind of like what you see in movies where you have this group of people, they've got to fight to survive, they're doing these things, and people are getting picked off or bad things are happening. That makes sense to me. But I'm just not particularly moved very emotionally by what I'm reading, I guess is what I say.
One reason I was a big fan, even though it's not a good movie, but one reason I really enjoyed Sahara by Clive Cussler McConaughey I literally, before I even knew Matthew McConaughey, because I've been reading them books since I was like 10 years old, that's what I visualized. And when they cast him, I'm like, that is perfect. Because I had imagined Dirk Pitt in my mind for many a year. So for me not to be able to visualize something, and you know, I may not have it might be kind of murky at first, but then I kind of just like attribute it to something or someone and go with that. Or if like they're describing this, you know, alien world and swamps and trees and gloom and colors, and that procures nothing for you, is what you're
right.
saying.
Right, yeah. Which is why sci-fi stuff has always landed flat.
Yeah, I can see why, because that's all it is exposition on what things look like usually.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a huge portion of everything that sci-fi is, being able to picture these things, and it just doesn't work for me. But the ideas and the concepts of them make more sense, I guess. I do the ideas of the books. I could forget. I understand that. But like actually visualizing it, yeah, it's just not. Yeah, it's just not. Doesn't work for me.
And now a hard merge into board games.
We got sidetracked off of what the folks on Facebook were playing. What did you play?
So I played several solo games. One was that Resist by Dave Thompson and a bunch of other guys, Trevor Benjamin, Roger Takankskerly. I think this was a, let me look on the publisher side. This may be a, I feel like this game got sent out also by, what's his face? By Chad. I think Chad had this game. So Resist is the Spanish Civil War game. Basically, you play a group of loyalists to the Republic known as the Marquis, and you fight for freedom in this game. And it's a simple card game. It is kind of like a deck builder because you start off with these 24 cards that represent your rebels. And during the regular setup, you shuffle half of them off over here and half of them off over here. But the module of the game that's like, okay, now that you know what you're doing, pick the 12 rebels you want in your deck. And then the other ones get randomly added in, maybe as the game goes on. That adds a little bit of a flavor to it. And the whole game is basically, here are these mission cards, and these missions have what you have to defeat on them, and then other cards get added out, which are like the guards or the enemies you have to defeat. And all you're doing is playing from your hand these cards that you draw up and deciding, do I want to put them in the concealed side or the revealed side? And so if you're using the concealed side of the card, your little rebel will do something neat, but they're not so much powerful in terms of defeating the enemy. But if they're on the revealed side, they can add a lot of strength to the fight. But at the same time, they go away after that. It's like they've been revealed, so you can't use them anymore. They get their burn notice, kind of. And that's the entirety of the game, is playing that, pushing your luck, and then knowing when to say, okay, I'm done. I've completed these missions, and then adding up your score. Because if you lose two missions or there's another thing, so many civilians die, so there's some adverse side effects to that, you lose the game and it's just over. So it's basically playing either through a point system to see how many points, victory points you can gain, or it has a neat little booklet that does like the thematic story of the Spanish resistance and type thing that you can go through. It's a neat little game. I'm going to play it again before I pass judgment on it because it seems it seems more complicated than what it is, but the setup after I got going, I was like, oh, this is the one mechanism I'm dealing with, which is just dealing with my hand. This is it. And it's a neat little puzzle, but it didn't quite engage me the first time around. But I'm going to go play through the actual historical side of it first and see if I like it, because this might be a winner, because I really like that solo side of It's a Wonderful World. I'm like the only person that likes that game solo, where you're just, here's this deck of cards, you have to build these cards and complete them and just try your best. Yeah, I like that for some reason. So that's Resist. So that's I played that, and I played the SOS Titanic, which is a very morbid version of solitaire. It's a solo solitaire, where you're basically trying to do what you do in solitaire, you know, from 1 to 17, the numbers, put them all on this boat, which is kind of like the ace in solitaire, and get them off the ship before the ship sinks. And if you don't, they die. And then you score how many people you saved at the end. It's very, very, it's very morbid.
Have you ever, quote unquote, won?
No, not yet. I haven't played it that many times. I'm not good at solitaire. I'm not good at solitaire because it gets, I don't know, it just doesn't engage me. This is kind of the only gamey part of SOS Titanic, besides it has a wonderful production value. Like, it's a little book and you flip the book and you see the ship sinking and the characters and everything. There's little actions that you gain that allow you to break the rules. And that's really the whole thrust of the game, is breaking rules and knowing when to break them. And I don't know. It's too abstract. It's a neat production. Don't get me wrong, but it's still just solitaire.
It is.
And I just,
when you said this is solitaire, but it's, you know, thematic, I was like, oh, okay. Then I played it, and it is literally solitaire, just thematic. And but the way they have you can scoring and stuff is kind of interesting. And the little powers, like you said, can be interesting, your captain power or whatever. I think my high score was like 36. It's like nowhere near being enough to win.
Like 60s, I think, is like the high score or something. Like, that's how many passengers are on there. Yeah. And apparently there's a way to get that many people off, but, you know.
I didn't do very good.
Who knew?
And I also enjoyed Resist as well. Well, yeah, like you did. I mean, I didn't play it a whole lot, but the few times I played it, I was like, yeah, it's good. But at the same time, those, to me, like solid, like both of those games, Resist and SOS Titanic, they're fun. They're quick. They're kind of like my jam as far as solos, but they're also the type of game like there's not a whole lot to them. So they're not like super engaging, but they're fun to like knock one out real quick just to stay in the groove of gaming.
Well, yeah, but I had this was like my gearing up for more solo stuff. I bought what's the name of that little card game that you don't need the cards for? Is it Regicide?
Yeah,
is that the one I'm thinking of? I played that with Natty Hoffman at BGG, and he had the actual deck of cards. I bought that deck of cards because I really enjoyed that game. I didn't get around to playing it, but like those are all the little light solo games I set out to kind of get me back into solo gaming right now. Because I've got a huge list of solo games that I want to try out that are going to be quite the challenge. And so I'm
mostly like wargaming stuff.
Well, I do some of it. I've got an old copy of a GMT game called Flight Leader that I'm looking forward to. I repurchased again. It falls onto the rare game that I have obtained and sold and obtained again, but a copy of Ambush, which is the quintessential moving guys around on a hex map type thing. It's like one of these games that truly has a very innovative system where you're on a grid and then you look up from this huge basically rule book that says, okay, roll to see if your guy sees something. And it's like, did you pass the test? Yes. Okay, well, turn to page and read paragraph 936. It's like a scenario thing. And so that's a big one. And it's kind of the granddaddy of all the solo war games. Besides that, and a bunch of others that I really need to knock out and try. Yeah, I've got a bunch of solo war games that I've got lined out that I need to get back to the table and see how I feel about it. So...
Well, that's good. I've been gaming more as well. I've actually been doing quite a bit on BGA, even Async. I'm not crazy. Actually, I don't. Well, you know what? I started off really hating Async, but you know what? When it comes to my gaming, I'm like, it's better than nothing. Something's better than nothing, as we've already established.
I like it for what you, for,
Can't Stop.
Can't Stop. That's it. Yeah. I love it for Can't Stop.
I played a game of Gold West with Geoff and I forget some of the others. I know them by their names, their BGA names, and I forget their real life names. But anyway, Gold West, I won. Of course, it was Jeff's first time to play, so I'm sure the next time he plays, he will destroy me. But I love Gold West still. And I also played Sky Team. That was the first new game I've played in a long time. I played Sky Team with Maxwell. I think we played two games pretty quickly. That's a fun game. I really like Sky Team a lot.
I want to play it. Looks cool.
It's really fun. I saw a guy on YouTube playing it solo, and I think it seems like you could easily play it solo. I'm not sure why they haven't made a module for that, because the way he did it, he just played one set of dice, all of them, and then played the other set of dice, and then it would reverse it. Like, he'd play all the blues, and then play all the oranges, and then play all the oranges, and then play all the blues. And he just went back and forth like that for however many times. I was like, that seems to work. But, yeah, it's really fun. Of course, me and Maxwell were talking a little bit more than we should have because I had no idea what I was doing the first game. So he was kind of walking me through it. But it is super simple, super simple. And just play some dice. And some of them you add up to get certain amounts. Some of them you subtract and hope you're within range of those amounts. And those all affect your engine, your speed, your what do they call it, the horizon, the plane being level or whatever. And you just, the timer is every time, the timer is the airport's coming at you. And so you have to clear the one runway ahead of you. If there's planes, you got to clear the planes out ahead of you. That's one set of dice. You got to make sure you're going the right speed. You got to make sure you're at the right altitude. You got to get your brakes ready. You get your flaps ready. It's good. I was just surprised at how much I liked a game on BGA that I've never played before. And yeah, I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to playing it. I want to play it on, I'll play it on BGA just to see what I think about it, because I've been wanting to play it for a while. I didn't get a chance to play it at BGG. Yeah, it looks like a good one. And it was like a popular thing there for a while. Yeah, it's like everybody was
all the rage,
really liking it.
And other than that, in real life, this past weekend I played. By the time this comes out, it's been 2 weekends ago. The King is Dead and Barony, both smash hits. We played Barony. I won that one as well. Also teaching two new people. That's about the only way I can win. I always say, you know, I enjoy the first victory because as soon as anybody else learns it, I get destroyed. But I'll take the wins as I can get them. And then I taught King is Dead next. And then the person I was with immediately wanted to replay it. They loved it. We replayed it and they beat me. So yeah, but they're still great games. Both of those. Wintergreens. No, evergreens. They are evergreens.
Evergreen by definition is something that like stays forever. Like you don't get tired of it, right?
Right.
All right. Well.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if I like that term.
I mean, I thought that's what it was. I thought that's why we used it. I mean, we
I know people use that, but I don't know if I like that idea that there's nothing you can't get tired of.
I mean, they're...
Because I think you can get...
Forever. Okay, well, I mean, I don't know how long forever is in gaming terms, but from the first time I've played it up until now, the many, many times we've played both those games, they are good, and they are staying in our collection.
No. I don't mean that. Like, yeah, I know we like it, but I just mean the idea of something being an evergreen. Like, that means that it always keeps your interest. Like, you never can get tired of it. I just don't know if there's, like, I mean, it depends on how much you play it. I think you can get tired of anything. You play a lot.
Probably. Am I using the right term? Have you heard that used?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You're using evergreen. That's what everybody, they always say, oh, this is an evergreen. It stays around. And for some reason, I've always thought when someone says evergreen, I know most people think of it, like the vast majority of people think of it as like this game, it never gets old. You'll play it forever and it never gets old. But I always kind of think of it as a game that it fits its use. Like if it's whatever it is, it stays that, like if it's good for beginners, that's the game that you always pull out to introduce people to the hobby. I've always had a weird, different definition of evergreen because I often think, well, anything can get old after a while.
Can you picture an evergreen in your mind?
No, it's just a tree. It's just a tree.
You know what a pine tree looks like. Can you picture a pine tree?
It's just
a tree.
Yeah, it's a tree. It's just a tree. It's what it is. Like a tree's a tree.
But you see it when you close your eyes.
I don't.
Weird.
I know what you're talking about. I can say, yeah, it's a tree, but I have no need to picture a tree.
Anyways,
April the 13th.
So when you're a kid, you never like played Cowboys and Indians or anything.
Nah, I mean you could do that without picturing it. But the rules are the same.
But you're pretending in. I can't comprehend it.
Well, I mean, you could do something without picturing. Like you can participate in something and still not have it visualized in your head.
I mean, you are correct. I know you're correct. To me, it's just so weird.
Yeah.
To not.
I'm saying it.
Be able to like. It blows my mind, quite frankly. Do you talk out loud to yourself?
No.
So you don't even talk out loud to yourself a lot.
Why would I need to do that?
Because you don't have an inner monologue. So what is your brain doing?
Well, I mean, why do you need to talk?
So when you're reading a book, what do you hear? Or are your eyes just scanning?
I don't hear anything. I'm looking at the words.
Do you like kind of hear your own voice in your brain?
No.
Huh.
I'm looking at something and comprehending it.
So That is interesting. So interesting. I can't comprehend that.
It would seem repetitive to me to have something have to talk out loud or to hear something repeated. Like, I hate things being repeated anyways.
I mean, it's not repeating. It's not repetition. It's just like, it's like listening to audible, but in your mind, without it being audible, just in
your
brain.
But you're seeing it, and then you're hearing it. You're repeating it.
Yeah, I guess so. I can't comprehend being you. You can't comprehend being me.
I comprehend being you. I got it. I don't have to. I can imagine that. It's not hard.
But you can't imagine.
Yeah, I can.
Can you imagine all the people?
Yes.
Hmm.
It's not you're thinking in terms of pictorial sense, but imagining doesn't have to be necessarily with image or with empathy. It can be like a logical algorithm of this is what thus. This is how they feel. This is what they do. This is what they think. Thus, this is the case.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this show. Until then, I'm Gabby.
This is Jerry.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tolerating this episode of the Board Game Snobs. Stay classy.